Hello everyone, welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babe. Jason Giaconetti here. Now normally this is where the opening would go, the music, and all the other great jazz. But being as this is our 10-year anniversary and a very special episode to me, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for the 10 years of support. I also wanted to say that this is the last episode that my dad and I were able to record together while he could still speak enough to be able to actually record and do the things he needs to do. And hopefully you still find the show to be interesting and something you want to come back to and part of your podcasting, a list of shows you enjoy, as it's been a lot of just me lately. I know that the discussion on the show is much more limited without having my dad here to talk with me, but I just want everyone to know that even if this is our last episode, which it totally could be, I want to know that everyone know that I've appreciated the 10 years of support and love that we've gotten from the community, and my dad does as well, and all our guests, my brother, John LeMay, Jonathan Inbody, all the different people who have been on the show over the years, all truly appreciate all the love and support that you've given us. So without further ado, here is episode number 202, the 10-year anniversary. Enjoy.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah!
See, a United States astral robot becomes a creature of death.
Oh. And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from classic cults and all the cheese in between. The movies are a babe. The entertainment is grade A. And I am your host, Mr. Jason Giaconetti, joined again by my dad, Mr. Al Giaconetti.
Good afternoon, Jason. Today, we're going to go back to the early 50s. We've got an ambitious movie that we're going to discuss. It's called Invaders from Mars.
And we'll get to it right after this.
Invaders from Mars. He saw them land from outer space. He saw them capture innocent people only to destroy. Father turned against son. People changed into strange, weird animals. A general of the army becomes a saboteur. Trusted police turned into arsonists. The boy's parents changed into killers.
But nobody's getting anywhere out there. Nobody can locate anything. Anybody. The Martians. We've got to start the...
Invaders from Mars. Capturing humans at will for their own sinister purposes. Turning them into diabolical instruments of destruction.
Ah!
invaders from Mars. Weird, fantastic beings of a super intelligence, ruling a race of synthetic humans and pitting them against mankind's dream to conquer the universe.
Come on, step on it. Search every tunnel. We gotta find Ronaldo and the kid. When the girl gives a signal, get back here on the double.
Invaders from Mars, released April 9th, 1953 in Detroit, and it's probably up to the same time nationally, probably a week or so later. It was released in April 53. With a 77-minute running time, your budget is an approximate $290,000. Your director here is William Cameron Menzies. He was set designer and stuff like that, right?
That's exactly what he was. He was a visionary set designer and a director.
Yeah, but his directing stuff was small. What you've seen he did is he burned Atlanta to the ground Gone with the Wind.
Using the wall from King Kong.
Yes. Your screenplay credit goes to Richard Blake, story by John Tucker Battle. The producers were Edward L. Alperson and son, because it's Alperson Jr. Your stars here are Jimmy Hutt, Helen Carter, Arthur Franz, and Morris Ankerum.
And Leif Erickson
and Hillary Brooke. Yep. Your editor was Arthur Roberts. Music by Raoul Crashier. There's a lot of A's and U's in that. Yeah. This movie was distributed by 20th Century Fox, but it was made by the National Picture Corporation. So this is an independent movie, which I'm going to say right up front. This is 53. There's parts of this, and I'll talk about it when we get to them. Like literally when I'm watching this going, this looks like a movie that was made a couple years later, which is way better, because Invasion of the Body Snatchers The Invaders from Mars from 1986, which is the remake that came out in the 80s, is much more violent, whatever. That movie's, to me, as a movie goes, is much more entertaining a movie because it's also like 1980s, and I think it might have been canon. Like, it's just, but it's action-y, you know, kind of thing. But it's not a better made movie. It's just more action-y. This movie was looked at as just kind of like not called like a it was not critically acclaimed at all when it came out. Definitely people kind of looked at it like it's just kind of a sci-fi movie, whatever. Although there are because you know why? Because no one knew what was going to happen a few years later with Invasion of Body Snatchers. But there's so many like signposts in here that they don't pay off. But Body Snatchers 100% does. So Invaders and Body Snatchers, Don Coscarelli cites this as one of his, that he did. He used parts of this movie in his 1979 movie Phantasm, which you can hear here covered by Jonathan Inbody and myself, and on the vault. It has some plot similarities to Brad Bird's The Iron Giant, the movie the starring Vin Diesel as the voice of the Iron Giant. And then it's, you know, there's a lot of there's clips from this movie, which people still to this day, especially stuff at the end that show up. And whenever you talk about science fiction movies, that shows up because it's very iconic and people remember that. All right. So plot summary goes a little something like this. Awakened during a thunderstorm, youngster David McLean witnesses a bright brightly lit flying saucer. There's a lot of alliteration there. Disappear underground in a large sand pit behind the house. Okay, so this is Movies in Color, 1953. Now, you watched the European version. You watched the British version, right?
I watched both of them.
You watched both versions. Okay, so I watched the restored theatrical version. The restored theatrical version takes pieces of the British version in the conservatory, puts it back in, but it doesn't have the British ending. It doesn't have any of that stuff. But what they did was they went to the original film they found in, I want to say it's Australia, but it might be New Zealand in a film vault. They had the original, and they scanned it and made a 2K restoration directly from the original. So everything that looks muddy and washed out on your version looks crystal clear on my version.
That's what I was saying.
And it's brand new release, not the older release.
Yeah. I was saying it almost looked like a sepia color. You know?
Yep. But that's been one of the knocks on this movie for years. It always looked washed out. It always looked like that. So when they announced that in 2023, they were going to put out the special edition cleaned up, I was like, yeah, let's get this. And again, even if you're not a huge Invaders from Mars fan, just the idea of having a movie so cleaned up you can see it is sometimes to me, I'm like, well, it's got to be better than, than watching it grainy, kind of thing, or through kind of a haze. When his father investigates, he returns a changed man. Soon, David's mother, a young neighbor girl, and others begin to act in the same way. Okay, so the father's a scientist, and he's obviously a very caring dad. But David sets his alarm to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to look at what the way that, like, there's something like Mars is
in conjunction
with the whatever, and the mother tells him to go back to bed. So he said he sees something goes down about 5 o'clock in the morning. The dad goes out to look. Now, you're thinking stuff going, okay, like, yeah, he's thinking there's nothing there, but he goes out there and then he disappears. And the mother is so worried that she calls the cops. And of course, the cops are giving her the runaround. The cops, like, and this is how you can kind of tell this movie is independent compared to a studio picture. The cops are like kind of implying, like, well, you're sure he's not out like drinking or running around on you? Like, you would never have that
at 5 o'clock in the morning after he got up out of bed.
Right. He got up out of bed and you're going to, are you sure he's not going to do it like those? So those are the kind of things. Remember, oh, good grief. I Married a Monster from Outer Space. Bill, where they ask all the crazy, like, where have you been? I was out. And he's in his like slippers and whatever. And I'm like, what? Like, it's literally the same idea here. He's walking around in his slippers. He comes back to the house with one slipper on. And Davey notices in the back of his neck an X. And he says, I caught it on barbed wire.
Right.
Which I, as a kid, I was thinking, like, is that a problem? Is barbed wire just randomly around? But, you think about it. He's like, there's no barbed wire. Then what happens? He smacks him. And you're like, yeah, we know.
Yeah, the father's attitude goes 180 degrees from being, a loving, well, son, let's go look and see what the issue is to, shut the F up because,
So, and this is where I got the complete Invasion of the Body Snatchers vibe. As soon as the dad reappears, you're like, oh, this is so like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, right? And again, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is 57. So
it's about 4 years later.
Yeah, but I'm saying, and also, this is not based on anything he wrote. This Invasion of the Body Snatchers was a different story. And again, it's a different movie and it's a different story. But when the cops show back up and he's like, we won't have to report this because you're here. Like, you're like, man, is this Body Snatchers. Right. And nothing, again, Invasion of the Body Snatchers to me is the best science, one of the best science fiction movies ever made, let alone one of the most influential, right? But when you watch it there, it seems new and different because that's not the attitude you had. Because let's be face it, Invaders from Mars is often not forgotten, but like kind of overlooked because people remember the end of the movie, but then there's things that are silly in this movie that you're just like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Right. Oh, I forgot about that, right?
And that, when we get to that, that's what sinks this movie to
well, but
to,
yeah.
I mean, the concept, I mean, I wrote it down. The concept was, is fine. It was a very, they put a lot of, I mean, the storyline is, you had never seen this before.
Right.
At least I don't think.
No.
So it made sense. The issue was no budget, not the greatest actors. And then the production values, sort of like just fall off the cliff, and you wonder where that $250,000 went, because it certainly doesn't come up on the screen.
Well, it's actually, they had to buy those four pieces of stock footage they kept showing.
Yeah,
they had to make sure they paid for all that.
Believe it or not, you can. At the time, we read that one time. The stock footage at that time was a staple of tons of movies.
Yeah,
even really.
Yeah.
Big time
well, because movies. Because you couldn't get your hands on a tank. Or get your hands on a plane or a cruiser. Like, you didn't have that stuff available to you. You couldn't do it with CGI. Anyway, so after that, now that's when he goes to he sees the neighbor girl fall in, and he goes to tell the mother next door, is that Sally fell in there, and she comes back and she's got flowers, and the mother's like, where were you? So I was getting flowers, and she's now completely emotionless.
Right, and she sets the
house on fire. And but that's what I'm saying. So when you look at this, and I'm certainly not saying that Invaders from Mars and Invasion of Bystanders are that there's so many things in the very beginning of this movie that line up close to conceptually some of the ideas in Invasions of the Bystanders. The difference is in Invaders from Mars, there is no Red Scare. There's no Russia. There's right. no nothing. What is Invasion of the Body Snatchers? It's literally like
yep.
the Cuban Missile Crisis. That's what we have. We have the hunt for all the communism. That it's literally the loss of self and loss of who you are, and you're going to be. That's not this movie, but it starts off that way. But then it starts veering away from it because they're not looking to take over everyone. They want to take over a few people and destroy the project to put people into space. So. That's where the two movies derivate greatly, and that's why maybe Invasion of the Body Snatchers still rings true today. The loss of self, the loss of you are. They want to take everyone over. We're taking you all over. This is like, look, we're going to take a few people, use them, and then kill them.
Well, the Invasion of the Body Snatchers is like Metropolis in a way with the lemmings. That they want everybody going down the same path. I mean, the thing about this movie is that I have never read anything that said that Invasion of the Body Snatchers was... did any kind of plagiarism of the storyline here.
Yep.
But when you get into the movies that we're more familiar with, Alien was supposedly a ripoff of It Came From Outer Space.
It is.
Right. But O'Banion swears that it was his own, you know.
He can swear that all he wants. He literally knows that he made the exact same movie.
Right.
And the difference is... it's the same movie, even to the point where the guy's using a blowtorch, and they use a blowtorch in Alien, right? So, but the thing is, that has never. That's something that's kind of like everyone said. I never even put two and two together with these two things. So it must be something that, again, I've never seen it anywhere that it's ever been brought up. And I think part of the reason why is because this movie is not about taking over everyone. It's about taking over a couple people we need because. That's the whole thing. It says, what's your name? Who are you? Like, are you important to what we need?
Yeah.
Like, it literally is the Martians coming here saying, hey, look, this is actually probably closer to the day the Earth stood still in theme, but they're not compared. And it's not the same movie, obviously. Day the Earth Stood Still is way different than this film. But that's the concept. The aliens come to Earth and say, hey, cut it out.
Right.
Because we're going to blow you up. These guys are like, hey, leave us alone. Fine, we're going to come here and kill you.
And yet the day the Earth stood still was, what, only 4 or 5 years, you know, after this movie, too.
But I'm saying, but that movie, being why, because I think it's told as a much, that movie's very serious.
Yeah.
Day the Earth Stood Still, there's not funny, it's not whatever, it's very serious, it's very true, that kind of science fiction.
But when you think about the previous science fiction movies, you had The Thing, you had, and matter of fact, not even War of the Worlds was after this.
Yes, this is after.
And so what you had was,
War of the Worlds is like this, but they don't take anyone over. They're just trying to kill everybody. Yeah. So,
but again, so this was part of the early part of the science fiction. I don't want to say invasion, but science fiction set of movies, and then you had the big bug movies came in. But as a precursor to the ones we just talked about. The premise is there.
Yeah.
If it was done by a major studio with a big budget, this could have been a fabulous picture.
And the thing is, we might not be talking about Invasion of the Body Snatchers being so influential because it might have been looked at as like derivative of this. I think that's what really the main difference is, though. With Invasion of the Body Snatchers, whether you're talking about the book, which originally was cut up and the book was gathered and finished off after it appeared in those articles in Playboy.
Right.
And it wasn't like an article. It was like pages and pages. And you bought it. And there's people who went crazy because I got to know how this goes. And that was so captivating that they had to make a movie. I mean, the movie was greenlit before the end of the thing was even there. And now the book is very different than the pods fly in and whatever. But you got to wonder if they had explored here the idea that maybe they're Russian, maybe they're whatever, you know, kind of thing. It might have been a little on the nose, but it wouldn't have been at the time. That might have made this movie pop up a level from being Saturday matinee kid fodder.
Right.
You know, because this doesn't explore that at all. I mean, they are literally, Think about in this movie, because you know it has to be low budget, because you don't ever see any effects. No one gets sucked into a hole. There's a hole opens,
right,
and a hole closes.
Well, believe it or not, the sand effect, the first time that you see it, and that looks pretty good, because all of a sudden it just empties out.
Yeah.
Right. But when they keep showing it over and over and over again, it gets so repetitive.
Right. But you never see anyone go in the hole.
No, the guy goes gone.
Like, you don't see anything grab him. There's no monster. There's no hand. There's no mole man.
Right, that's right.
There's no hand grabbing him. That's exactly what I wrote down.
Yeah. I said, you don't have the mole man coming up and grabbing him.
Right. And the mole people was not exactly like, you know, major budget. I mean, what does it say in the beginning? And it takes place in where? Asia. Okay, cool. Way to narrow it down, buddy. Right. You know, kind of thing. Like, the mole people wasn't exactly breaking any new ground, although it did have, what, the first interracial kiss ever on, ever filmed, right? Whatever that was, right? With the, because she was one of the underneath people and he was a, like, or whatever. And they were very controversial. They had to kill her off, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, you're anyway. So he tried, what happens? David now, he got to talk to the chief police. He can't get himself arrested in this town. That's what I'm saying, you know, kind of thing. So he wants to talk to chief of police. Chief of police goes in there and he's going to call his dad. And he's like, don't call him. And what happened? He looks in the back of his neck, has got the thing, the X. But David, at this point, has already gone. He's run. He's tried to call the scientist at the astronomer.
Right.
He's not there.
And the stock footage of that is that's the Palo Alto Conservatory.
Yes, yeah, which they show several times. Right. He stops at the gas station to talk to the guy who's there. I'm not sure what he's going to do, but at least he's like, what do you mean? What happened? He says, is everything okay? Like, no one wants to believe him. And I think he goes there to the police. And then what happens is, and then they lock him up, right? When they lock him up, like, they just throw him in a cell.
Right, they got him in a cell, and he's sitting there by himself in the corner. Yeah. But then they bring in a doctor to check him out.
Dr. Blake, yeah.
The woman, that's Helena Carter.
Yeah.
And she comes in, and she talks to him, and she realizes there's nothing wrong. But when she goes out, she actually puts the key back in the cell. This kid can't escape.
Well, his line there is, you don't have to lock it. I won't run away. She goes, I got to follow the rules. And I'm like, so here's the thing is with that scene, he asks to see the back of her neck. Like, he's clearly scared. And, right. And I don't know, the guy who doesn't get any credit in this movie for the desk sergeant there.
Yeah.
Right. He's really good. Like, he's kind of chewing on the scenery a little bit, but he's pretty good in his role because you believe him as being the desk guy. Like, come on. Like, he's not playing stereotypical over-the-top cop, whatever. He makes sense, and he calls the doctors. He's worried about the kid. I'm like, man, this makes sense, right? So when he checks the back of her neck and to me, it's like, how many of these movies do they never believe the kid and never believe the kid and never believe the kid? We're 30 minutes in. They believe the kid. And I'm like, whoa, but there's only 77 minutes. So we got to get the kid because we got to get the army here, right? So what happens is she gets on the phone with the astronomer who she's friends with. They, bam, bing, 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 before you know it, the army's there. That's where they got all their stock footage. Because this movie's about 50 minutes long. Yes. And there's probably padded out. The scenes of just them loading tanks.
Thanks.
You're like, because you're watching the movie and you're like, in another movie, here's tanks being loaded.
Right, and there's hundreds of tanks.
No, hundreds of tanks, right? So the mother comes and, you know, she says he's got what, smallpox, something like that. He's contagious, and she's got to keep him quarantined. And then the restaurant's like, oh, let's get him one. She goes, he's not sick. Like, it's just like, this is why you know this movie's independent compared to being you know, a studio movie. Forget the fact that they don't have studio players in it, right? I mean, even though Helena Carter would go on to be in a lot of Abbott Costello movies and stuff like that, but
not Helena Carter. That was Hillary Brooks.
Hillary Brooks, excuse me.
Helena Carter's the doctor.
Yeah, right. So she would go into being. I'm saying, but you don't have a lot of
no. And Leif Erikson, this was an early movie for him, and he was a lead actor in quite a number of movies later on in his career. Again, it's the story. The way the story is fine, but the way it's being laid out on the screen, if you don't have enough money to make it believable, to where it becomes almost a misty movie rather than a Saturday morning you know, matinee at the movie theater type of movie, you lose everything. I mean, it starts to get a little ridiculous.
Right. Well, this is the problem. We're 30 minutes in. You know, he's already established that, you know, how you can tell who's an alien, who's not. And now the adults immediately believe him. The army immediately comes.
Well, the astronomer is the one who believes him so strongly, and he's the one who has all the influence.
But I'm saying, when he sells the doctor on it, and they both call the, but the army shows up.
Yeah.
I mean, how many movies do you have to really get? I mean, they get the army to come, and then one of the generals is to take in up there.
And he's looking for his Medal of Honor.
Yeah, he goes, no. And then when the first guy gets taken, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's what convinces them to come. And then the other guy he's a sergeant or whatever, he's right with him, right?
Well, he's the police chief.
No. He gets taken too. What I'm saying is when they're on top of the house,
that guy is
like, I think a sergeant or sergeant, something like that. Yeah. I don't remember what his stripes say, right? But the whole point is you're like, wait a minute, what? Like there's things that occur that take this thing off the rail. So if you just looked at story, laid out the story, you're like, this makes sense. It's kind of procedural, whatever. It's going a little quick. But once the army shows up, there are scenes now, and I said this to you before, that you can, they're all the stock footage of like these tanks rolling into place, and in places that are far different than where we are.
Right. And they have a troop carrier.
Right. Train. Right. Yeah. Not only that, you're got things in a jungle. I mean, there's things in, like, you know.
And I got to tell you, about the only, if we see 10 army guys on the screen, In a live action shot, not a stock footage. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's all. It's everybody. It's everybody and their brother. Like, who has it at home? Just put it on. So the problem is, then you have the scenes where they're shooting, and it's supposed to be up the winding path to the sand, which is now, you know, disappearing. Right. That looks like it's a soundstage. It looks like literally someone took a scene from Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Right. When they're, you know when they're supposedly. I know it's an emu now, but everyone thought the munchkin was hanging themselves and killing themselves in the background. Right. It looks like that.
Yep.
It looks like that. Like, literally, if you don't remember, go back and look at it, and you'll be like, oh my God, it does. Is it from there? I don't think so, because this was an independent movie, and that, you know, obviously Wizard of Oz was not an independent movie, made in the same place kind of thing, but it looks like it. And yet, how can something that's supposed to be big look really small?
Oh.
Everything's crowded. They can't pull back on the shot, because then you'll see that there is no army there.
It almost when you see that shot, it almost looks like it's not a real person falling into the pit, but like an animated human that is just goes off the edge of the road.
But it's a person just jumping off.
You're
right. So, but that's the back of the soundstage.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, that shot, you always get the same camera width.
Right.
Because if you pull back a little, you can see where the sides of the soundstage are. And it's like, wow, how do you make something big look small?
Move.
That's how you do it. You just, because it never moves off that. Then you cut the stock footage. And I love the best part is when they're trying to surprise the Martians, they said, shoot over that side, away from us. They'll never know where we're going. It's because they couldn't afford to make explosions happen more than once in the movie.
And the explosions are the exact same explosions over and over and over again.
It's okay, though. But it's also the same scene of all the mutants.
Oh,
now, they call them mutants.
Well, that's what the astronomer said. He says, we know that they are, and you're right, it's not mutants, but mutants. And then when they,
I'm just saying,
and then when they come,
because this island Earth could be yours if the price is right.
But when you first see them, they go, hey, there are the mutants.
Like, everyone knows that's what they're called. Like, as if literally they're a band coming in from, hey, the mutants are here. Da 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 da, you know, and they're carrying around their ray gun underneath the ground, which looks like a Zuzuzella. You know, those things they used to blow during the World Cup. I think, right? But that thing, it melts the ground or confuse the ground.
Well, it emulsifies the rock.
Right, but it either melts it
or
reforms it or explodes it. All those things can happen.
Yeah.
And underneath, what it also causes clearly are balloons. It causes a lot of balloons, because that is what, and this is the difference. I know you watch yours on the disc you have. When you watch the restored version, oh my God, are they balloons. They are just white party balloons that someone blew up and taped up. And when they run by, they shake. It's supposed to be the calcified earth and the whatever, right? but they're just balloons. And I'm like, oh God, no. Like, spend a little more tape would have held that thing, because they sway when they run by. And if you hadn't used the same shot of the same two mutants running four different times, back to back to back, and then the other two mutants, because they filmed two different ones. One times they're carrying stuff, and then there's the other two guys, and then one is a little fat, and he's got the thing, and he's not carrying anything. They show the same ones over and over. The worst is this. When they have the Martian in the dome, and they walk to carry him forward, when they walked backwards to carry him back, it's the same scene played backwards. I'm like, what? Why? You couldn't film this carry forward, carry back? No, they just took the one, pick him up, carry him forward, and they just reversed it. And the mutant, the mutants got those stupid like ping pong balls over their eyes, right? They can't see anything. But the Martian is clearly a guy with paint and little tentacle things that they're wiggling around. And all he does is look left, look right, look up, look down. And it's the same scenes over and over and over again. And I'm thinking to myself going, why not film? He's already in the makeup, right? It's just a tight on him. Why not have him film, have him look different, have him do different things? Just anything.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's telepathy at that point.
But I'm saying,
no, but he's looking at, you will do this. You will do
that. Right. But I'm saying, right. But I'm saying that is, but like, instead, like, maybe shoot like more than like 6 inches of film. Like, film a bunch of different ways so that it's not always the same one, because it's always done in the same order, the same things.
But film costs money.
I understand that. But that's what I'm saying. And that's why they kept replaying things. So we've kind of jumped here a little bit, but they show up. They eventually get underground. They take the doctor, female doctor, and and David are taken under there. They're gonna put the chip in the back of her neck, which, you know, was pretty cool. I mean, I like that they make it so that, like, oh, how was she killed? Well, they detonate the transponder in the back of their neck and gives them a brain hemorrhage, right? Like, I've seen Suicide Squad. I know how that works, right? Kind of thing. That kind of sounds like that. But even the scene, like, when he's running with, when he's holding Dave and they're running like away, he's yelling like, Captain, whatever, Captain, like, he's not saying anything. And the voice is coming from nowhere. And the voice, like, what? Like, it felt like the dubbing was wrong.
Yes.
I felt like something was off. Like, yes, there was something missing.
He was yelling, Colonel.
Yeah. Right. But from where?
Yeah.
And it didn't make any sense. He's coming this way. How do you know? It's coming from all around us, and he's not saying anything. But the scene that everyone knows in this movie, and this is the very famous scene, is when they go to put her on the, they go to put the doctor on the table, and David runs up and starts pounding on the glass with his fist of the Martian. And the Martian, they cut to the Martian, and it's his look down, piece of film where he looks down, right? That, when he runs up and hits the glass, that's famous. That has been copied and done whatever. So when people talk about Invaders from Mars, that's the scene they usually talk about, right? Of course, the other thing is, they can't get out of there. They're now stuck. David, of course, knows how to use the alien ray gun because he knows everything. Thank God the smartest person in the world is there. Now, in the 1986 thing, here's the key difference. It needs copper to run. So in the movie, like, why, who stole all this copper? They're stealing copper to run it. And David knows that. Oh, sorry, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the 86 movie, it's a penny in the end that gets him, right? Just like the common cold kills him in War of the Worlds. Get over yourselves. He literally reaches in his pocket. And he has an old penny that's actually made of copper, and he puts the penny into it. And that's what, because he knows that, because he's been learning about it. The 86 movie is much more in depth than this, even though it's not exactly the greatest movie ever made. It's still much more in depth. But I always thought that was cool. But everyone made fun of it. They're like, oh, he had to put a quarter in it. I'm like, it's not a quarter. It's a penny. It's copper. It makes sense. They're stealing copper. Where have you been for the first 86 minutes? Right? Kind of thing. Here, he just picks it. He goes, I know how to use this thing. And he goes, steady it for him. So he knows exactly how to fire it, how to use it, what to do. Sure. Why not? Because, you know, he precogged all that stuff. He minority reported all of it from the end. Oh, but don't worry. Because now they get out and they're all running away. And they're running away, like, to Kansas. Like, they are running, like, they are Forrest Gumping this thing, right? We're going to run, Forrest, run. And what happens is the kid now has a flashback of the entire movie. So in the last 90 seconds or so of that, like of the running, they recap all 75 minutes to that point. And here's the best part of it. He's recapping things in there that he wasn't there for. He's recapping things where he's looking at himself. He's recapping things that he has no knowledge even occurred.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, you know, there's an old thing in business that says if you're presenting something, you know, tell them what you're going to present.
It's the concluding paragraph. Right, I understand
then,
that, but
then after you told them that, tell them again.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying the concluding paragraph here was like, hey, want to see the whole movie again in like 90 seconds? It literally tells you scene for scene, everything in order. What happens? Stuff that he wasn't there for. People getting blown up that he doesn't know about.
Right.
People, whatever. So, and of course, in the American version, he wakes up in his bed and it's all been a nightmare.
Well, you know, the thing is that they try to tie the beginning and the end together. As the movie ends in the American version, the clock is at the exact same time. It's 20 minutes to 5 in the morning when the lights flash. And then, you know, the thing is, I said, was it a dream or is, ha ha, we got you, you know? And then that's when I said,
well, this version, the US version, which is the restored theatrical version, which is what you can get on Blu-ray now, has that ending. And that ending is the dream ending. That's what it's referred to. It's a dream. It's a dream because there's no way that he like could, and again, unless he's precogging Minority Report kind of thing the entire next day.
Yeah. And then his real father and mother come in.
Well, there he goes and checks on them, and they walk him back to bed.
They walk him back to bed,
and then it says the end.
That's how it ends. And that's when I said, what's the difference with the British version?
Yep.
I mean, it's not like it's, you know, we've got an alternate ending that's you know, unbelievable. So I watched the movie again, and I said, oh, okay. So they added the scene of the astronomer showing the kid a picture of the spaceship.
Yep.
That's it exactly. That's it. And the rocket ship. And so that wasn't in. That's not in the U.S. version. But again,
that's how
the word mutant comes
yes,
into play.
Yeah.
And then, but when you get to the end,
there's not just that. There's scenes there too.
Yeah.
So when they're running, we don't get the full. We don't get the flashback.
Right.
We get they run to there. He's running, and then he falls, and you're like, wow, did he get 3 inches taller and his hair get different and his vest change?
Yeah.
All of those things are yes, because it was filmed later, and the only people that get back were those two actors. They didn't get the mom, the dad, anybody.
Right.
So then they're like, oh, he's there, and he's like, and they go, don't worry, I'm sure your mother and father are fine, right? She literally says that. The next scene is they put him to bed.
They put him to bed.
As if they're now his parents.
Good news. Yeah.
So clearly mom and dad didn't make it out of surgery. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry. Not Billy. Davey. Mom and dad didn't quite make it. We're going to adopt you now and live in your house because it's in his house.
Yeah.
So now they're mom and dad in his house. Yeah. Like, so as confusing as the flashbacks, the stuff you couldn't possibly know, and then recapping the whole movie and then it all being a dream, you know, the very, very April Fool's Day. Ha ha ha. The ending of the British one is a head scratcher.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what they were going for. Now,
I mean, even as you follow the film, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because now you've taken the two early lead actors and the mother and father. And why would you, what you had to say was your mother and father didn't make it.
Right.
And if you said you didn't make it, then the ending.
Well, but here's the thing is,
a little more
but at the end, if they say that, or if they say, okay, let's get them back home. And they, you know, the problem is they didn't have those two actors. They didn't have the mother and father anymore.
More.
So they couldn't do that scene. But like, don't have it be in his room. Have it be at the police station.
Or
have it be at the army hospital. Yeah. Have it be anywhere but his actual room. Because what happens then is then it goes to the end. It's the same end, says the end again. The difference is before that, we know that in the U.S. version, they blow up the spaceship in the ground. It blows
right,
up
yeah.
and it blows up. Here we have the shot that they have UFO coming down. They now reverse it, make it go back up because it looks weird. And then they put a god awful explosion over it. But you can see through the explosion that the craft is still there. And then they cut away. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And this is ultimately why Invasion of the Body Snatchers is one of the best movies of all science fiction movies, whatever you want to call it, of all time. And Invaders from Mars is a movie that came out in 1953 that was rushed to the theaters in an attempt to beat 1953's War of the World. Because War of the World came out the same year, just later.
Yep.
And they rushed it to theaters, desperately trying to beat them to it, because they were afraid that if they put out this movie after War of the Worlds, that people would not go see it. Now, in all fairness, War of the Worlds is not exactly a thrilling movie. It's a lot of chit-chat.
Right, and, but it's really nerve-wracking.
Well, the effects are good. George Powell's effects are really good. But
and especially the scenes at the crash site there, where in the houses.
Yes,
I mean you're getting nervous with them.
Right, but I'm saying, but the difference is that it's not the same movie. But there was no way that if War of the Worlds came out first, this thing would have done anything.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the way I summed this thing up, I said it was an ambitious but ultimately flawed, small budget, dialogue controlled, repetitive scene, minimalist FXX picture. And I, in 1953, when did this come out? April?
April, yeah.
So I'm not even 5 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't get to see this movie until probably 57, 58, when they would have four movies every Saturday morning, and they would throw in one of these, as a filler, depending on what the main one was. And the main one could have been them or whatever.
Yeah.
But they were all reissues or reruns, and the theater that we went to wasn't a mainstream, but it got the rights to show the film for a week.
Yeah.
And as I said, when you asked me to review this movie, I said to myself, this is the one with the floating head in the thing. And I said, that's god awful. And that's the way I said it. But again, I watch these movies with an open mind, and then it closes with...
Well, the thing is this, is that this might not be an all-time classic by any stretch of imagination, but it was one of the early ones,
yes,
which makes it important in the grand scheme of the sci-fi, kind of where sci-fi movies went.
Right.
It does have themes, even though no one else is mentioning this, that tie back into movies that... Because let's face it, Invasion of the Body Snatchers has been remade like four times. It's in everything, the pod people, all that stuff is there. And yet, when you talk about, someone says mutant, nobody thinks about these guys with the ping pong balls of their eyes. They think about the other mutants, which are in this island Earth,
right,
because they're like insects on your planet. And then you're like, does anyone notice his head is kind of big? No.
Yeah. But they don't call it a mutant in this island Earth.
It is a mutant.
Yeah. No, and I know it's a mutant, but don't they say mutant?
No, it says mutant.
Oh, it says
he's mutant. Yeah, he says mutant. Maybe they didn't know how to say mutant.
But which one came first? This one or
that? I don't know. I got to look.
I think that was 54, 55. Because that was done, that had a much bigger budget. The color was...
This Island Earth, 1955.
Yeah, 55.
And of course, that is a Jack Arnold picture. Right. So you know there had to be science in it.
Yes.
Jack Arnold's like, hey, you want some science, right, kids? And he puts science in his movies.
Even when the spaceship, grabs the plane, yep, and holds
it, it's pulling us up.
It makes sense. It really makes sense.
No, this Island Earth, again, was a major release. That's Universal International.
Yeah.
That was a July release. That was a lot of money. I mean, that had just under $1 million budget, and it only took in just under $2 million. But like, that is a big... That's a big release.
Well, you wonder this was made, even though there was a British version of it, and again, the version is later. So they got, after it was released in the United States, when it was released in Britain, they must not have wanted it to end that way. They wanted it to end some other way. So they
wanted a definitive ending. They didn't want it left open. Okay. Was it because what happens at the end of the movie, he wakes up, the spaceship comes down, and goes, oh boy, and it's literally the scene from the beginning of the movie again. You're like, wait a minute. And you start thinking to yourself, going, wait, did someone make a loop of this? And it's on like a loop, and now I'm like, Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah. Kind of thing. But, this movie, again, they like I said, there's elements of this this film. You can see it in Don Coscarelli's 1979 Phantasm, which is a much better movie than this. And you also can see other places as well. But Invasion of the Body Snatchers, sorry, Invaders from Mars, the title alone, a lot of people, when you say this, they think, oh, I know those. They had trading cards. I'm like, no, that's Mars Attacks. They're like, oh, I know that movie. That's this. No, that's this. And it's a movie that people don't always remember, except for literally the scene where he's pounding on the glass with the head. So, folks, that about wraps it up here for Invaders from Mars. We hope you enjoyed our take on this. And again, I can honestly say this. I've never seen it look better than the new release Blu-ray. It's clean.
It's streaming on...
No, this is nowhere. This is nowhere. I looked around. So this is something... You know when they'll show this? This will be on TCM because the new Blu-ray came out in 2023. Oh, yeah. So at some point, TCM will show this or something like that or whatever.
31 Days of
Halloween. Yeah, or they'll show... Because they might show it in a retrospective on... Leaf Cassidy or whatever, Leaf Garrett, whatever it was, right? Kind of thing. That's where it will come up because now they have a nice, clean version.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And 88 minutes.
No, this is 77 minutes. So this is perfect for them.
Even play even better.
Because they get all the talking head stuff.
Right, you're right. The beginning and the end.
Yeah. They can have talking heads.
I mean, sometimes when we do these, Jay, we always say, well, you can buy the Blu-ray here and the thing that.
You can. You can get the Blu-ray.
I know. This is one of those times where. If you can find it someplace else.
Well, how you would pick this up, honestly, is you would go buy the 1986 version, and it comes with your one. Disc. The right. disc you have that I also have somewhere. I mean, I have it, obviously, in the book with the 86 version. The 86 version gets real expensive and hard to get. So to get it on DVD, you get them both together for cheaper than you can buy either one.
Right.
So if you're interested in the 86 version, which I do like, but I mean, I saw it in the theaters. That's how long ago that was. I was 8. And Luke was 6. So we saw that in the theaters back in the day. But, yeah, it's, so. But, like we said, folks, we hope you enjoyed our take on, Invaders from Mars. Do you remember this? Do you have any thoughts on this? Do you remember watching this when you were a kid? Is this a movie, if you watch it, like, oh, man, I misremembered it as whatever? We'd love to hear from you. Send us stuff. We'll read the feedback. So, like we say around here, folks, keep those cards and letters coming. And keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo. Once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc., are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?